May it please the court. My name is Mark Labaton. I represent the whistleblower, Stephen Hartpence, who is a former executive vice president at Kinetics, now part of the 3M company. I intend to reserve 2 minutes for my rebuttal, and I'll keep track of my time. I'd like to focus the court on two errors of law and also a series of errors of fact. But before I turn there, Your Honors, before I go there, I'd like to say a few words about our case. In late 2000, CMS approved Medicare reimbursement for a home usage device that KCI, the defendant, provided. And it was a unique vacuum healing device that was supposed to be used only to jumpstart wound treatment. The rules put in place then stated in no uncertain terms that KCI could only use this and bill Medicare for continuous monthly uses of this expensive device when a wound showed tangible signs of improvement as measured signs of improvement. False Claims Acts in our case relate to the hundreds of millions of dollars in claims that KCI billed Medicare in violation of the rule. And despite years of efforts at the highest levels of KCI, the corporate CEO, executive vice president, KCI.
Do you agree that the stalled cycle claims that's the only thing left before us?
No, Your Honor, I do not. There are two things left before you. The stalled cycle claims, and that's an artificial term. Stalled cycles refers to a month in which there was no wound improvement and KCI continued to bill for a second month. So, Your Honor, there are what KCI...
So what's the other piece that's still here?
The other piece that's still here is the months that KCI billed for when there was no signs of wound improvement. And so there was no measured improvement for month one. KCI billed for month two. KCI uses a term that's an artificial term called stalled cycle that is first mentioned after I repeatedly failed to get the rules changed here. That term is first mentioned in 2004, 4 years into the fraud of the case. But we're talking about any kind of month where the wound didn't improve, whether it's the second month, the third month, service is supposed to stop, and our allegations are stopped. What is called stalled cycle claims by defendants is a subset of these claims, Your Honor. I'd like to address now the two errors of law that the judge committed and then discuss some of the errors of fact.
Excuse me, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Judge Berzon's been trying to ask you a question. Right over her.
I didn't hear a word.
Can you hear her?
I cannot hear Judge Berzon. I could hear you.
Really? Can you not hear me now?
I can't hear Judge Berzon.
That's very peculiar because everybody else can.
Hello?
Make a very difficult argument.
Hello?
Mr. Labaton, might I suggest that you join the call by the phone number provided in the email that was sent to you? If you cannot hear all of the panel.
Let me get that phone number and call.
Can we stop the clock for now, please, while we straighten this out?
I can't hear. I heard Judge Collins. I'm able to hear.
Yes, Judge Collins was got you to understand that somebody else was trying to speak to you. Judge Berzon was trying to speak at you. We have stopped the clock so that you can figure out your technical issue. I am the AV technician. I am also speaking to you from Judge Collins's connection. You can hear me okay. Judge Baldock, would you mind saying hello?
Yes, I can hear so far. Can you hear me?
We can hear Judge Baldock. Mr. Labaton, could you hear Judge Baldock just now?
I could not hear Judge Baldock.
Okay, I'm not certain why that might be the case. I've not seen this before.
I'm not sure neither. we were set up, and we did a test yesterday. Everything.
Everyone. Yes, everyone is connected and everyone is hearing everything. Mr. Lynch, you're able to hear us? I'm sorry, Mr. Luce?
Yes, sir, I can hear.
Mr. Luce is able to hear all panel members?
I can hear all panel members, although Judge Berzon's connection is a bit scratchy. I've noticed that in earlier arguments.
Well, I don't know why, but in any event.
That's much better, Your Honor. Thank you. I could actually hear you better then.
And you can hear me? This is Judge Baldock.
You're a little more faint, Judge Baldock, than in the earlier arguments. Perhaps this proximity to the speaker. I'm sorry, I'm out of my depth when it comes to the technology.
Can you hear me now? That's better.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Mr. Labaton, are you hearing Judge Baldock and Mr. Luce speak?
I am hearing Mr. Luce speak.
Okay.
I'm not hearing Judge.
I'm going to ask you to...
Yeah, could you give me that? I don't have my phone in the room with me. Could you tell me that the number to call?
The phone, yeah, we just sent it to you.
By email.
By email.
Right. Could you tell me that? Because I'll call on a conference line.
Yes, stand by, please.
And I think my time, there was a lag before you stopped my time, but I'm not sure about that.
Okay, don't worry about the time. Let you finish what you need to say.
The world of Corona.
But we haven't had this problem before. He can't hear me. So he's going to...
Okay, the phone number is 669-254-5252. The meeting ID number is 161-261.
161. Yes.
I apologize. Stand by just a moment. That was incorrect. The first part was correct.
669-254-5252?
That is correct. The meeting ID number is 161-814-8691 with a password 909. 669.
Okay, so 669-254-5252-161-814-8691-909-669. Correct?
8691 and then 909-669, correct.
Okay, so I can just call in our conference call number and I should get you
guys? Yes.
Okay.
I'll see it come up in the waiting room and I'll admit you into this conference. I'm going to mute your audio when you connect by phone. Participant could not hear. You could hear most participants, but not certain other participants. I've never seen that before. Mr. Labaton, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I'll turn off the...
You're going to want to mute your speakers.
Okay. I can hear you now.
Judge Berzon.
Can you hear me?
I can't hear you. I did not hear you, and I apologize, Your Honor, last time. I was talking and I didn't hear you.
Why don't we try Judge Baldock? Can you hear Judge Baldock?
Can you hear me now? This is Judge Baldock.
Is that Judge? Yes, I can, Judge Baldock.
All right.
All right. I'm very sorry to that your argument interrupted this way. It's a great artifact because you hear some people and not other people. Anyway, why don't you go on, and we'll give you at least 1 more minute.
I'm sorry. Judge Berzon, I heard you, but it wasn't that clear.
I said you may resume your argument, and we will put another minute on the clock than what was said.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. So as I was saying earlier, the rules put in place here stated in no uncertain terms that KCI could not bill Medicare for continuous months of the usage unless the wound showed tangible signs of measured wound improvement. And despite this effort... Okay.
Issue other than this stall cycle, but it sounds like they're both the same thing. The second thing you said was the same as the first thing, no?
Right. Okay, Your Honor, I'll move on. I'm sorry that I didn't know where we got cut off. I was going to address two issues, Your Honors, of errors of law, and then address errors of fact in the court's opinion. The first error of law involved the court's the Escobar opinion that overrides consideration here. This opinion required the district court to look not just at the government's conduct, but also at the defendant's conduct, and the court failed to do so. Here, the defendant's conduct in their efforts and time that they spent at the highest corporate level to try to get these rules changed and failed is a confession of the materiality of their conduct and their knowledge. They would not have done this if it wasn't material, and they would not have spent devoted those resources to it if it was not material, and they knew that. The CEO of the company flew halfway across the country to South Carolina in an unsuccessful attempt to try to get these rules changed, in addition to that, the court did not address, in looking at materiality, the issue that the fact is that the rules put in place and the approval of this device in the first place was just to jumpstart treatment and not to be used beyond that unless medically necessary. The second era of law, Your Honors, related to the court's interpretation of the critical rule at issue in this case, the LCDs. Now, the court's summary judgment order on page 2 specifically defines what the judge believed was the issue before her, and she says that the ultimate issue was whether the KX, whether the company here, KCI, falsely added the KX modifier to claims for wounds that ultimately improved, even though the wound showed no prior improvement in the prior month. That is not the plain language of the LCD. That's what the defendants desired that the medical directors rewrite it to say, but that is not what it said. This is a misreading of the criteria.
That's not really the issue. I mean, there's no dispute that that's what it says. The question is whether, in light of the standards in the Escobar case, it's material because the government knew that the company had a different view of what should properly be paid despite the LCD and submitted them and made its view known that it was going to go forward submitting them.
Your Honor, that is a different issue.
That's the issue before us. Right. That's what the district court granted summary judgment on that issue. So why don't you address that?
Okay. That issue gets to a series of errors in fact made by the court. The court bases the opinion that the company knowingly approved and paid claims on just a few pieces of evidence. And there certainly is strong countervailing evidence in the record that the court ignored. Sorry, Your Honor. I didn't hear you.
Tell us essentially why that you think there's countervailing evidence such that there's a dispute of material fact as to whether the district court wrote a very careful opinion, or very extensive, detailed opinion in any event, in which she recounted, as I understand the story, yes, they were trying to change the rule. At some point in frustration, they got some indication that they were pretty close to changing the rule. The rule wasn't actually changed, but they told the medical directors, or at least a medical director, that they were going to go ahead and still, according to their belief that the stall cycle should be paid. So to that degree, there was notice that they were going to do that. And then there were some audits which turned up that they did do that and didn't do anything about it. And in 2010, there was a specific decision that, yes, we know they're doing this, but we're not going to change anything. All right, so I want to know what your facts are that counter the notion that that's sufficient to meet an Escobar standard.
Yes, Your Honor, I appreciate the question because it does get to the heart of the case. These are some of those facts. The medical directors continuously told the defendants that they would not change the rule and were sticking by the rule that forbid them from doing that. That is very...
Can I ask a question about that? I thought they put out some document in 2003 saying, yes, you have to do this. And then in 2005, they withdrew that document.
No, Your Honor, that is untrue. And I would point the court directly to the 10-Q filed by the company on May 3rd, 2005. And it's in the record, Your Honor, on page 4965. And what it says is contrary to everything else that was mentioned here. It says the company is saying to the entire public that as of this date, and they never said otherwise in any other 10-Q, two of the four medical directors are absolutely opposed to changing the rule and will not allow these claims. This is compelling evidence. And the other two, they say the company is still trying to persuade and talk to. In other words, at this time, the 10-Q in May 3rd, 2005, the company is saying two medical directors will not allow us to submit and get paid for these claims. And the other two we're still on first base with. So that is strong, compelling evidence, contrary to everything else, and it's coming directly from the word of the company. But that's not all, Your Honor. There's plenty more. The Region D audit, in which the court said that there were five claims denied based on our theory of the case. And the reason that the court got that wrong is because the court misinterpreted those five claims to be allowed based on the defendant's reading of the LCDs. And that's why I said there's an error of law there. So there were five claims disallowed in the Region D audit based on our theory of the case. In addition, there was a full OIG audit mentioned in our papers in which $20 million of claims were denied based on our theory of the case. This thought it was done in 2007. That is compelling evidence, too, Your Honor, contrary to the opinion and all the facts mentioned. This 2007 audit, by the way, was used by the defendants themselves to get this case dismissed earlier on the ground that our fraud was publicly disclosed by the fact that $20 million of claims were rejected. So for the defendants to now deny their own motion, they should be stopped from doing that. So those are three pieces of evidence contrary to that the court ignored, contrary of material facts where the court got it wrong. A third piece of evidence where the court got it wrong, Your Honor, is the ALJ opinions, because the ALJs also specifically rejected claims based on our theory of the case. Now, defendants point to some claims which were allowed by the ALJs who had medical records before them and showed medical necessity. But with regard to those few allowed claims, and it was a small minority of claims that were allowed, Your Honor, the medical direct, those claims might well not be part of a case because the court only adjudicated in our case the liability phase, not damages. So we have three audits, Your Honor, that reject claims based on our theory of the case. The court got that wrong. It got it wrong with regard to the Region D review because it applied the wrong standard of the LCD. It missed the other claims. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I'm just trying to be very specific about what you said. There were three audits. One that disallowed claims. One was the Region D audit, and you say that there were five claims, and that's just
correct.
Then there was the OIG audit in 2006.
Then seven.
There was three.
The third was the ALJ findings that we talk about. And these were adjudications by the highest level of Medicare, the Medicare Council, which rejected claims based on our theory of the case. So there are three, and defendants acknowledge this in their brief. So there were three instances where claims were rejected in the review process, and the court missed it on those. With regard to the Region D, it wasn't. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Let's assume your facts are correct. So how do you apply SFR standard at that point? I think it's not clear where it falls. Essentially, it's not material just because it has a statute or that it has the option not to pay. It has to be found where noncompliance is minor and substantial. But then it says that defendant knows that they consistently pay claims in the nine run of cases. So that's standard. In other words, what do you have to show that the government is paying these? What does the operator have to prove that they're not? How consistent does it have to be? It seems like this is inconsistent. So how consistent does it have to be?
Your Honor, the sound was a little off, but I think I understood your question. I hope I did because the sound wasn't great. There are several ways in which the court missed the boat on Escobar. One is, as I mentioned, it didn't look at defendant's conduct here. The other is, it was very clear by the SEC filing that I referred to that the medical directors were not agreeing in 2006
What I want to know, and let me see if I can be heard this time, is how inconsistent does the government's behavior in paying this have to be under Escobar? In other words, there's some language about what happens in the mine run of cases, whether they pay or whether they don't pay. I mean, what we seem to have here is indication that they knew they were doing this and were paying, and some indication that sometimes they didn't pay. So how does that fall under Escobar?
Okay, Your Honor, well, I don't, I believe that that there is not a factual record to know for the second proposition that, or the first proposition that you make, that defendants, that the government knew that this was being paid. And the reason
didn't the company at some point specifically tell them that they were going to build this plant?
No, it didn't. The only evidence that they rely upon to indicate that the government had knowledge of this is notes from one of the medical directors, Dr. Hoover. Those notes are very sketchy. We never had the opportunity to depose Dr. Hoover. And in fact, those notes, and the government, if the government had decided this, we would have gotten a declaration from some government contracting officer. The defendants would have put that on a record saying this is what happened.
I thought Ms. Morris said that we told them that we're going to do it this way, or there was something in writing where they said we're going to continue to do it this way.
There is nothing in writing from her saying that. She did send a sales memo which Dr. Hughes, one of the commission one of the doctors received, and it was only sent to him. He didn't send it off to anyone else. He regarded it as, when he testified, as a sales memo and not something as a sales memo from the company. That's the only thing they sent. They never made any kind of disclosure or memo to the file that these guys approved, or disclosure. It was very sketchy. What was made in terms of a disclosure. The record, if viewed carefully, was there was no real disclosure to the government of what was doing. This was designed to hide what was going on after repeatedly being asked to make the changes and not change them. The government did. The record is not strong enough to support, when looked at carefully, the fact that the government knew about it. If they knew about it, there would have been a lot more there. They would have something from a contracting officer or someone in the record saying that the government knew and approved. They don't have that. All they have is these notes from Dr. Hoover, and they're contradicted by evidence such as the SEC filing and plenty of other evidence that in the record. In addition to that, if the defendants have tried to get this case dismissed by the government, with the government's authority to dismiss cases.
I have one
case.
More question. Colleagues have questions. The district court pointed to a June 23rd, 2004 email from Morris to Dr. Olick, which says about stalled cycles. For these cases, we will hold the claim for the stall cycle, but may allow continued use for 1 month. We will submit claims for both cycles, etc. What about that? What is that direct notice that that's what we're doing?
No, it was not, Your Honor, because it was. If you look at the context of those emails during the time period, and particularly with regard to an email that Dr. Olick sent back on August 24, 2004. This was part of a negotiation that was going on to try to change the rules. And Dr. Olick is saying in that email, I might consider this idea a stall cycle, but that's not where it ends. His sentence goes on. He said, provided certain conditions are met. And they never agreed to those conditions. And that's why the SEC filing on ER-4965 is so important, because the medical directors with all Ms. Morris's communication.
Yes, that's true. There were negotiations going on, but at the same time, in this June 23rd document, Morris said, this is what we're going to do. Meanwhile.
She said, "This is what we plan to do," and the negotiations were going back and forth, there is an email in the file from Dr. Olick in December 2004, and saying, we're not going to agree to any of this. They should know it. And that's why we have the SEC filing, because they were told in no uncertain terms by Dr. Olick and the others at the end of the year, you can't do this because we don't have an agreement. And that's right. Why the SEC...
Thank you. Your argument is very helpful.
Thank you, Your Honor.
A technological glitch, and we'll give you a minute. Mr. Liu.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I'm Greg Luce, counsel for KCI in these proceedings. let me just say at the outset that we would we appreciate the court taking this matter up on an expedited basis because of the companion case that's pending. Going straight to the heart of the matter, I would encourage the court.
What's pending? I didn't hear that. What's pending?
I'm sorry, Deferis, I'm having the same problem.
Oh, well, I don't know why, but you thanked us for taking it up because something is pending. What's pending?
There is a companion case, the Godecki case, okay. And so the court was good enough to take this up on an expedited basis partly at Judge Snyder's request. We appreciate that.
What's the status of the companion case?
That the Godecki case has stayed pending the outcome of this court's determination of this appeal.
Go ahead.
And so I would commend the court to the record and the actual documents. This has been a routine and very disturbing problem throughout the case, that the representations about the record made by the relator's counsel are not really borne out by the document. But more importantly here, we're coming before the court on cross motions for summary judgment. On the only issue that remains, as Judge Collins asked, but I don't think was fully answered, is the risk sharing or the stall claim issue. The relator did not brief the other remaining issues, the monthly wound measurement and the surgical complication claims in their appeal. And they have not really effectively briefed the scienter argument on materiality as to the one claim that has been brought forward to the court. But importantly here, there is no material dispute of fact.
Well, on the issue, I want to focus on the question Judge Berzon asked before, and that is, what is the Escobar standard? Because we do have some evidence in the record that some of these claims were caught and denied. So they sometimes enforced this rule according to the letter, the LCD according to the letter. How much of that needs to occur before we say that it's the mine run or regular? What's the standard that we get out of Escobar?
I think the standard, Your Honor, is first of all, is what was material to the government's determination to pay a claim. That's the test, not the defendant's conduct when it comes to materiality. And in this case, we know that these claims were routinely paid.
Well, they were routinely paid, but they weren't always paid. That's the problem.
That would be true in almost.
There's also some evidence that although that they reiterated the fact that this has to be done according to the LCD at times, and they did refuse to formally change the rule, even though they were asked to, which is some indication that they were and said that we were going to continue to enforce this rule, whether they did or not. So there's. I guess my real question is, why isn't there enough evidence to deny summary judgment? Enough conflicting evidence. And that does turn to some degree on how consistent the pattern has to be under Escobar to be material.
Well, I think that there are a couple of immediate responses to that. First, Judge Snyder's opinion looked at what constituted the so-called claims denials. There was the audit of 2007. Counsel has mistaken in his judgment about how that audit turned out. 19 claims that included a KX modifier underwent an intensive review, multiple days, and a 2.5-hour presentation by our client, in addition to their document review. Of the 19 claims, 14 were paid using the KX modifier and implicating the risk-sharing policy. 5 of the claims were denied for grounds other than the implication of a stalled cycle, including the one, as Judge Snyder called that in her opinion, which involved that there was never an improvement in the patient's wound to support medical necessity.
I understand that. What about the 2007 OIG audit?
Sorry, Your Honor.
What about the 2007 OIG audit? Did they just elect?
2007 OIG audit reviewed claims from 2004. It was issued in 2007. It concluded that, and this is, I think, very important to Your Honor's consideration, in their review of claims, the OIG identified the fact that the DMARCs were not following their own LCD and were paying these claims. That was exactly their finding. They not find fraud.
That's another question. Who's the government?
Who is the government? The ultimate payer in this case?
Why are we limited under the Escobar question to whether this particular level of review was paying the claims?
The government is, in this case, the agency for payment is CMS, Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Right, okay.
The private government contractors can interpret but do not ultimately decide whether or not a claim is covered under the reasonable and necessary standard by statute and regulation. So when the OIG notified the DMARCs that you are not following your LCD, the DMARCs certainly knew that they were still paying these claims, these very type of claims, in the mine run of cases. 250 cases were examined by the IG. I think the important thing there is that the IG applied, and the standard that the IG utilized in their determination was the LCD. It was not any other statute or regulation. So what they said was, we also conclude you're not following your own LCD. And that would have been consistent with all of the discussions that went on in 2004, which were markedly different than as counsel has described. Even on July 7, there was a draft of an amendment to the LCD itself. Admittedly, the LCD was never changed. The government continued to pay under the risk-sharing policy, and they have acknowledged this. What is being called Dr. Hoover's notes is, in fact, a document of September 3, 2010, called call notes. This is established as a meeting among the medical directors. It was produced by the government, and it is dispositive of whether or not the government, including their payer agents, were aware. They say the literal reading of the policy says not to use KX if wound size increase. Next point, KCI will hold the claim for stalled month, and if next month improves, we'll bill stalled month with KX. Next point, KCI does this based on discussions in 2003 and 2004. However, no action was taken by DMDs, that's the medical directors, in policy to memorialize decisions. Our client had every reason to believe that this was an accepted practice. It did not result in an amendment of the LCD, and to this day, it does not result in an amendment to the LCD. And to this day, if a claim doesn't heal in the second cycle, our client doesn't appeal that claim. They don't pursue a challenge to the LCD. They simply write off that cost and discontinue the therapy. But if the therapy works and the wound heals in the subsequent month, they continue to pay the claim, and the LCD has never been amended in that time.
I asked the Labaton for his particular examples, and the third one was ALJ opinions, which said that they rejected claims on this basis. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm just very hard here.
I'm sorry. The third example that Mr. Labaton gave was that the ALJ specifically rejected claims on this basis. Is that correct? I gather that the ALJ parent organization changed in the middle here someplace, and that your client was somewhat discontent with that because there seemed to be more likelihood of getting claims denied with the DHS. With the HHS ALJs. Were they denied?
They were not denied on the basis of using the KX modifier. That's the other thing, as Judge Snyder pointed out. Claims that went on appeal were claims that were greater than the last four cycles, and they were never submitted with a KX modifier. So the claims would go up for 5 or 6 months,
and those were routinely denied, appealed, and KCI won most, but not all of those. So the ALJ rulings were really looking at a different set of appeal points, which is really uncontroverted. I would add, I actually had four points of evidence that Mr. Levin had, if we count the 10Q. The 10Q was not something, was not a document that was relied upon at the motion for summary judgment. It says basically that which has been said throughout the SEC filings, which is there is a disagreement. If the court is going to consider it, I'd ask that the court carefully read it, because I think you would find it markedly different than represented here today. So there are four pieces of evidence, none of which go to nullify the fact that of all the evidence, I mean, the argument that the medical directors did not know is effectively and thoroughly without contradiction rebutted by their September meeting notes of 2010. But more to the point, there was a constant exchange of information on this. And Dr. Olick wrote...
an exchange of views as to whether the LCD should be changed. In the end, it wasn't changed. That's what's so peculiar.
It was never...
So there seemed... Your suggestion essentially is that the government officials, or officials acting on behalf of the government, determined that they were going to shove this under the rug or under the table. And although continuing to tell people that they were applying Rule X, they really were allowing your client to not follow that rule. That's your contention. And Escobar seems perhaps to countenance that. As showing materiality, but that's the portrayal. Is that right? That they knew that they refused to change the rule, but they knew it was being violated, and they continued to pay.
They did, and there's no evidence that truly contradicts their knowledge. And again, I would commend to the court the record, particularly from January 2004 through September of 2004, when the correspondence shows. And what has been dismissed as a marketing point was, in fact, the communication that was distributed to each of the medical directors saying, this is how we bill. We will continue to bill this way.
Right? This is how we will bill.
I'm sorry, I was speaking over, Your Honor.
This is how we will bill? I mean, it wasn't
clear
that they weren't saying this is what we would do if you approved changing the rule, as opposed to this is... what we're doing now. It's implied.
They made it very plain, and the judge found appropriately to not take up the semantic, Hail Mary offered by the relator here. It was very clear. One of the reasons it's clear is it was written in February. It was shared with Dr. Hughes about a month later and shared with all of the other medical directors in April. The whole sequence of communication shows this is how we're billing, and of course, it's confirmed 6 years later in a call note among most of the same medical directors. I think it's critical to understand that there was no question in the mind of KCI, nor was there a question in the mind of this relator, who himself said in the summer of 2004, well, I think we have an agreement. I think we can proceed now. That document is in the record. It's a communication from Mr. Hartpence, the relator here, who also said that he believed in the course of the audit that they would be found to do everything right. Mr. Hartpence has offered no declaration in this case. None of his testimony is cited by the relator. He has made no statement in support of his motion for partial summary judgment or in opposition to ours. He was the senior business officer who oversaw this entire function. I think it's critical to understand for the court's full appreciation that the documents that are being characterized and argued against do not provide the relator with any evidence that confronts those facts that have been put into evidence by KCI at summary judgment. They're not entitled to an inference on an inference. Their facts are not there. And they waive their other cases. Your Honor.
I had a quick question before your time runs out on your alternative argument on Azar versus Alina. They've said in the reply that because of the contractual obligation you undertook to comply with the LCDs, that that argument fails as a matter of law. What's your response to that?
It could not, in the course of a contract, create a legal obligation that hadn't been established by the agency following notice and rulemaking, notice and comment and rulemaking.
These LCDs,
so it couldn't have been material. I'm sorry, Judge Berzon?
The LCD sets out a rule, but it also sets out that a procedure that you're supposed to write KX to mean maybe this is a variant of the contract argument, but it seems to me it's not so much a regulatory declaration as a statement about how to fill out a piece of paper and what we're going to understand you to have said when you fill it out. And I don't understand why that's not informative as to what that piece of paper means if you write KX. It doesn't really, it's not a question of whether the LCD rules are enforceable. It's whether the fact that you, if you were told that you write KX, it means certain things, is going to be taken to mean those certain things.
Well, I think it does have to be enforceable in order to be material. But with respect to the factual representation, in the absence of the clear record showing that the DMARCs understood how we were billing.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Marlena argument that somehow these LCDs are all, you know, are off the table. It doesn't seem to me, it's not so much that the LCDs are enforceable in the abstract, it's that the LCDs tell you how to fill out a piece of paper, and what we're going to understand on the piece of paper. And I don't understand why an agency or an administrator doesn't do that. It happens all the time. You fill out a piece of any government form, and there are directions about how to fill it out, and that's what this is.
I think Escobar
substantive rule about what we're going to do with it. It's saying write KX. It means that you didn't fill for a stalled cycle.
Well, Your Honor, I think there are two issues. One, is it a factual misrepresentation? The court, district court, Judge Snyder found.
And now on the other argument that somehow these LCDs are irrelevant, and I'm saying I don't see why they're irrelevant. It's true that way.
I'm not saying they're irrelevant, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that, first, there was not a misrepresentation of a material fact that led the government to make a claim that it would not have otherwise paid if it knew that the case.
This is what's disturbing about the case. It was a misrepresentation in terms of what they were told KX means, because KX means that you followed a set of criteria, and in fact they didn't. So it was a misrepresentation. You're saying it was essentially a condoned misrepresentation or a known misrepresentation.
It was understood that there was a difference between the policy expressed in the LCD and the payment practices of the DMARCs throughout the history of this case.
It was okay to say something that wasn't true.
It was okay to say something that our client understood would not have made a difference to the decision of the government payor. In this case, the DMARCs.
Even though it wasn't true. I mean, you still have to.
Yes, even though it wasn't exactly accurate, because that's exactly what Escobar says. The label of something is not sufficient to create a falsity. It has to be measured by A, did it affect the payment? Here it did not. B, did the defendant believe that it would affect payment and submitted a false claim anyway? And here, that was clearly not the case. The record is uncontradicted on the client's knowledge. I have exhausted my time. If there are no further questions, I thank the court.
Thank you very much, Mr. Levin.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to make a few quick points. Number one is the reason that these claims went under the radar despite the defendants being told they couldn't make them was because this was an automated pay system that got paid automatically. The defendants say in their motion for summary judgment otherwise. They say that each DMARC reviewed all the claims personally. Not so. We disputed that fact. It was automated pay system. Once the claim was submitted without documents, it was false. It got under the radar because it was automated. The other proof of the defendant's fraud scheme is in a document in the supplemental excerpts of record. It's by Jerris Sitton. She is a She said she works in the appeal section. She sends this email to Teresa Johnson, who's the head, vice president of the company, and she says, let's not appeal fifth-month claims, because if we appeal these fifth-month claims, they're going to discover that there was no documentation of measured improvement for all these other month claims. That all of that was we'll forego the fifth-month money, because it, by doing that, we conceal that we got money from directly violating the director, the medical director's instruction. That document is in the supplemental excerpts of record, and I urge the court to look at it. I also urge the court to look at the defendant's own filing when they moved to dismiss this case, in which they admit that the OIG finding specifically rejected $20 million of claims that fit our theory of the case, and I urge the court to look at the OIG report on that as well.
The OIG was not an enforcer. The OIG was reviewing the enforcers.
Correct.
The OIG didn't reject the claims because it didn't have the authority to reject the claims. Is that right? It essentially
right.
could have been rejected, but they weren't. Doesn't that cut the other direction? By demonstrating,
right, right.
Once they told them that, and the fact that they didn't change anything, suggests that they knew very well that they were doing this. People were actually doing it.
The company knew that $20 million of claims were not being paid.
No, but what about the administrators, the medical directors, and CMS, and so on? They're now being told by OIG that very large number of these claims shouldn't have been paid because they don't comply with the stalled cycle rule. And did they do anything about that? Do they try and get the money back? Do they change the? Do they get more careful in the future or anything?
Well, they kept to the direction that they're not allowed to do that, and that's revealed in the SEC filing that I mentioned, Your Honor. They also
the filing was before that, no?
That was contemporaneous, Your Honor. That was about contemporaneous.
All right, but I'm asking whether the administrators changed their administration and told that all these claims shouldn't have been paid.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I know that the money came back to them and they thought it was caught and the company was aware that they shouldn't be doing this. These were 2004 claims, so I don't. They were all canned. They knew that the process was bad. Now, 2004 was when the negotiation was going on. It ended at the end of 2004, so they might have had some basis to think there might be some question with those that year. But regard to one of the other points that Mr. Luce made was the draft that he mentioned a change in the rules, and he said it was substantially adopted. If you look at the draft, Olick deliberately crossed out conditions that he would not agree to, including that measurement be based on these terms tunneling and undermining, which were considered by him not reliable measuring standards. So they were not close to a deal in 2004. Miss Morris testified, and this is in the record, that the only time they thought they were close to a deal was that year, 2004, and the company clearly knew that it was prohibited since then. But it's the obligation of the company to comply with these rules that the medical directors made clear that were their policy. And once the claim submitted, as I said, it is false, and the company relied on the fact that it would go under the radar because of this automated system and because of the way they gamed appeals and all sorts of other things that after, certainly as long as possible, it would go undetected and the government wouldn't find out and wouldn't have to ask for this money back.
Okay.
But they did get
thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Appreciate your argument. Hartkens versus Connecticut. We will go to the last case. on Killer versus we'll go to the last case of the day and the week, Lodestar and Stahl versus Bacardi and Company. Thank you.